Welcome to TA1. I'm your host, legendary Randy Erickson, and we have an episode. I think I've made every joke about Nathan from being a rookie to how many times he's retired. So I don't think I can do anything. Just say we've got Nathan Fave this week, and he has some interesting things to say about the world and Adventure Race and all the things that are going on. So that's what we got this week. I guess I should tease a little bit, get a couple of episodes coming up with Heidi Mueller from Expedition Africa and the upcoming World Championships, and Ian Adamson, who's going to answer some more questions. Not the same episode, although that would probably be kind of cool. So, anyway, those will be coming up. I'm not sure exactly because they're both traveling, and we'll figure out where it's when we can do it. But yeah, those will be coming up. So, look forward to that. What's new here? We got our big Pine Island Odyssey gravel race coming up this weekend. I don't know. 500-600 riders, so I'll be up to shoot that. And then in 2 weeks, Black Hills 100. I think they have 600 runners, so always one of my favorite. And I get to go to Florida for the 4th of July. I'll be in Sebring with the Flying Ghost Racing Team, so that should be interesting. I don't know. I might not even pack a jacket for that. So, then after that comes Maine, Never Summer. I hope I got that right. I think I got that right. Anyway, looking forward to going back there and hanging out with the crew. And I think I'm scouting. I think my mom's going to go take a ocean trip along the Maine coast. So, two birds with one stone. Anyway, let's hear what Nathan has to say. So go fast, slow as fast, hit your marks, keep an eye out for the CPs, and thanks for listening. Bye.
I click join audio.
Right.
I hear you.
Here we go. we just thought I'd hit an extra screen up for some reason, but we got through.
Yeah, well, technology. Neither one of us are experts, right?
Well, we did pretty well to get the timing right.
Eventually, which is...
Yeah.
And I know why it is, because the website I use starts the week on Monday and not Sunday. So that's what screwed me up.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The common mistake I usually get is the daylight saving factor. So
yeah,
I quite often end up being an hour late or an hour early. So
yeah. What's really funny is I think I have the most trouble somebody in my same in the same time zone.
Yeah, well, that's true. I guess you just, that makes sense. When you have to put a lot of effort into figuring out what the time is, you build your day around that a lot better, I suppose.
You spend the time and I'm notorious. Anybody that knows me for getting wrong times, wrong days. Oh, wait, we're here for the music and it's tomorrow night? Oh, well, my bad.
Yeah, very good. So what's happening outside where you are? Is it you must be coming into summer, I guess, because we're about to hit winter.
Yeah, we had it was probably close to 80 yesterday, a little cooler today, and we got some rain, but it just got dark. So it's 9 o'clock here, so it just got dark. So we're getting into our long days, which nice. My favorite time of the year.
Yeah. Oh, good. So, well, a couple of years have gone by pretty quick, I think. Last time I spoke to you, I suspect it would have been after the world's toughest race, probably, in Fiji.
Yep.
I'm guessing. Yeah.
Has it gone fast, or has it been time dragging these last couple of years?
I don't know. Probably a bit of both. I mean, I guess time always moves at the same speed. It's just how you sort of interpret it. But it seems to me like we're looking back, and maybe when you look back, it always feels like it's gone quick. But
yeah,
to me, it feels like it's gone. The last couple of years have gone quite quick. But yeah, probably within that, I guess you're right. There's been some times where it's felt sort of wading through water or something. But yeah, we sort of. It certainly feels in New Zealand now that we're starting to come out of things like, there's more and more normality coming back into things. So,
how bizarre was your life? I mean, were you quarantined? Did you have to stay home, or were you able to go out, get in the woods, mountains, the ocean?
There was a few waves. So, early on, New Zealand took very, very hard lockdown right in the beginning in 2020.
Yeah.
And for memory, we were basically locked down in our homes for about 6 weeks. Other than going out and sort of getting resupplies, you weren't allowed to leave home.
Yeah.
Which was actually fine. Like, I think looking that period was actually quite fun for us anyway. And, you know, it felt like the right thing to do. And I guess it was quite exciting. Like, you know, you didn't really know what was happening. Was this the end of the world or, you know, whatever. Yeah. But, and New Zealand actually did pretty well. Like, we essentially eliminated COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when the really tight border restrictions came on. And after that, other than the borders being closed, life returned to normal.
Oh.
And we enjoyed, I don't know, almost a year, I think, of normal living, provided you didn't leave the country.
Yeah.
So it was just New Zealanders, no tourists and things. And then when Delta hit, there was a whole lot of restrictions came in again. There was another lockdown. And the second lockdown felt really quite onerous, I think. Like, it was, the novelty was over, and I think people were just kind of sick of it. And I mean, by and large, everyone obeyed. Like, I think as a nation, I think people pretty much get on board with that. But yeah, it was probably more of a drag. And and since then, there's sort of there's been an easing of kind of regulations and things. So, but the borders have only just reopened. And I think it'd be fair to say that most New Zealanders at the moment are still fairly cautious about travelling. There's probably just a bit of shyness there, just in case something happens. Yeah. And New Zealand government have shown that they will shut the borders at really short notice if needed. Mm. So I guess for us Kiwis, we're a little bit concerned if we go overseas and something sort of changes or evolves. And next thing you know, you're stuck. You can't get home.
So, that would suck.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, must be nice. Yeah, nice having a government that cares.
Well, yes, it is. I do feel very lucky, actually, at the way they managed it. But it has come at a cost. Like, you know, economically, it's going to be an interesting probably decade for New Zealand going forward. But, you know, in terms of, people's health and the, you know, loss of life and all that kind of stuff, I think it'd be hard to argue that they haven't done a good job. That's where their priorities were, and that's what they did. So considered, they did a good job, I think.
So things are normal, but like here, you know, there's no mask restriction. You know, you can fly now, but I'm not taking my mask off to fly ever. I haven't been sick for 2 years. So, I mean, you know how it is. You fly, you go overseas, you fly back. You're always sick with something. So I think I'm just going to keep doing this and stay healthy.
Yeah. I know. I must admit, I like it. I quite like going into stores, and because you still have to wear masks in New Zealand in certain places, and that aspect of it, essentially your point, I actually really like it as well. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how, you know, just as things kind of recalibrate, what new behaviours come out of it. But, yeah. I think, it is a good way. And I remember going to China years and years ago, and, you know, mask use there was a lot more common than anywhere I'd been in the world. And I used to sort of think, man, these people are so paranoid that they're going to get sick. They just live in a state of fear. But I actually learned when I was there, because I spent a lot of time working in China some years ago, that it wasn't actually people who were well that were generally wearing the masks. It was people who were sick.
Didn't want to get
other people sick. Mm-hmm. So I kind of thought, that's actually, that's a really good thing.
For a good point, yeah.
So they were kind of like, it was by wearing the mask, they were essentially sort of telling everyone around them that, you know, I'm just a little bit unwell, so I'm going to wear a mask because I don't want you to be unwell, and maybe just give me a little bit more space. Just a different shift in sort of thinking, but, you know, obviously, quite a good thing, I reckon.
Yeah, I exactly the same way. I kind of would like make fun of those people wearing masks, and then somebody said, no, it's because they don't feel well and they're looking out for you. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm a stupid white guy, so what do I know?
Yeah, that's right. So what about with event racing? I guess there hasn't been a huge amount for you to follow or report on, or things have been pretty quiet, eh? But slowly things are picking up again.
The last thing I did in 2020 was C2C, which was the first week in March, you know, and I basically got home and things got shut down. And then I went and did something in the fall, I think Blue Ridge. So yeah, like 2020 all summer. Then last year was, you know, people are like, whatever, we're going to go, you know, lots of the restrictions, lots of, you're going to wear your mask in the, you know, wear a mask in transitions and all that. And, you know, no award ceremonies, things like that. And then, so the first C2C in February, and that was, you know, Jeff had everything outside, which is nice. So you have a little bit of, also, you know, 400 people around. But I don't think anybody got sick. So we had that going for us. And then Venture Racing US is going great guns this year. There were at least three races this weekend in the US, you know, 18 to 24 to, you know, short ones. So, I mean, it's going great. I don't want to say I'm transitioning, but I actually have a job shooting for sports car races. So, you know, that's, like 10 or 12 weekends of the year. So I'm being a little, I don't say not choosy, but, you know, picking the ones I like and working with the schedule that I have. So, I'll be going to Maine. Yeah. Going to Maine in July for Maine Summer Adventure, which is a great race. I'm really looking forward to it. So, So things are picking up here. You know, this is America. We just declared it was over. It was over.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, cool. Oh, that's good. That's great to hear. There's some good events happening in numbers, and giving people the opportunity to get out of adventure race. So that's exciting. So I remember talking to you a while back about the motorsport stuff. I think you were heading down to Baja, I think, in Mexico to cover some of you down there and working on a car and things. So yeah, it's cool to have other things you're interested in and pursuing as well. It's good.
Yeah, because I'm old, So I keep saying I want to retire and stop doing big jobs and do little ones, and then try and pick up some of this, you know, other stuff, doing some photography and stuff part time. And I think it's going to work. Got sports car racing. You also got the fact that adventure racing is becoming more mature. And race directors are realizing they want something, they need to pay for it. So I think, you know, it's becoming a win-win. And, there's big push, you know, for the media, and I don't know, let's get on TV, which I don't know how adventure racing will ever get on TV, but if you're not Eco Challenge, so. But at least we're going in the right direction, I feel. Yeah. It must be growing, because we're starting to get some, you'll see some negative comments about races and things, which, three or four years ago, nobody ever said anything bad about anybody or anything or any race. And now every once in a while you'll hear like, well, you know, I didn't like that, which I guess that's part of the growing sport, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, you know, I'm an event director here in New Zealand as well. And, you know, you're not going to please everyone all the time. And I think when you're probably right, when people start having choice as to, you know, how many events or essentially the number of events they can do, they will start choosing which ones they think are better for whatever reason and things. Yeah, it's probably a sign that it's, there's a bigger audience out there and that it is a competitive, you know, it's probably a good thing when there's a competitive demand for participants, you know, shows the sports sort of moving forward and things. So,
yeah, I think it's going to up the race director's game. It's going to have to, or the market will go somewhere else. So, although you are sort of regionally, you know, I have to pick your races because you can't, you know, you got, there might be three races in the United States, but they might be all 2,000 miles apart. So, you have that part. So, So how are your races going? Did you have to cancel in like 2020, or how did it work out for you?
Things are going pretty good in New Zealand. I think, the major events happen to fall in periods where they could run. So there's been two God Zones during that time. Yeah. And the first one, they had to run with some changes, pretty much the ones you mentioned before. Yeah. With the events in the US, but by and large, from a racer's point of view, the time on course was just normal. Yeah. Once the race started, it was just a normal God Zone. So pretty lucky about that. Just with timing, they just happened to fall in windows. And for my events company, over that sort of 2 year period, we only had to postpone two events out of about 10, maybe. Mm-hmm. So we feel pretty lucky as well. We just happen to sort of, you have these periods where it's kind of like you can't run events, and then somewhere you might be able to, and then somewhere you can. And we were just quite lucky that most of our events just fell in kind of the periods where we could run them. It was a lot more work, like running an event under the COVID restrictions in New Zealand was a lot more work, and the numbers were down a little bit, but it was nice to be able to keep that momentum and just put on the events for those people that wanted them and who could come. From that side of things have been pretty, pretty good really. And, and going forward, it looks like it's just going to just continue to be more normal, I think. So that's the general sort of feeling and sense in the way things are going. So
were the numbers down because of the restrictions, or, you know, people were a little didn't want to get out? Because I know here, I think numbers went way up because people were like, oh, we can go do something.
Yeah, a bit of both. I think the numbers were down, different events, different things. God's Own were down a bit because there was no international teams obviously allowed.
Yeah.
For our events, we sort of went in a few different, there was different factors as to why the numbers were down a little bit. The first one was that I think people were just quite shy about sort of traveling to events. Mm-hmm. Because in New Zealand, if you traveled somewhere and then got COVID, you weren't allowed to travel home. You had to isolate wherever you were. Yeah. So there's just a few logistical things that I think turned people off a bit. The second sort of phase was that there was a vaccine mandate. So the events, you had to be fully vaccinated to do an event. Mm-hmm. So, which was the bulk of the population, but that did affect some teams because one or two members or whatever chose to be unvaccinated, so that would create issues for that team. I think just a little bit perhaps of, I don't know, just the people's routines were just kind of changed so much that. Mm-hmm. I think by and large, things went really well, but yeah, the numbers are just down a little bit for a few of those factors. We feel pretty lucky that we got our major events done. So yeah, it was good.
That's good. Cause I mean, it's a business, right? And I mean, what do you do if you can't run your business? That's kind of sucks.
Yeah, that's right. I think, I mean, from a business point of view, that was definitely part of the equation. But I guess events are a little bit different to a lot of businesses where, our company, the way it's structured, we don't run with big overheads or things. So if you don't run an event, you can actually, you don't really have any income, but you probably haven't got many expenses either. Yeah. But I think for us, it was more about, there's other factors involved and being able to provide the events, for the health benefits of for people's mental health and physical well-being and, the community health. And then there's a lot of economic health, putting a major event on when a lot of businesses were struggling. So I guess if you took a holistic view of health, in New Zealand, there's obviously a big focus on COVID health, but not at the cost of all the other things that would be affected. So I think, between some of the key event directors and our sort of Ministry of Health, like we worked really well together to try and make as many things work as we possibly could, rather than just shut everything down and tell everyone, come back in a couple of years, good luck. We'll see you.
Go away, the country's closed, come back in 2 years.
That's right.
So, I want a big picture answer from you because you know things. So we've got two organizations now with world championships, which was a huge big deal when it was announced. Now it seems like, maybe this will work. So what do you think? Will it work having two, air quotes, world championships?
I don't know if having two is such a great thing. I'm possibly out of the loop a little bit.
Welcome to my club.
So I'm aware of the A1 series and running a World Cup because our company's running a new event in New Zealand this year, which is part of the A1 World Cup series. As far as world championships, I've heard kind of some murmurings, but I haven't seen anything official from that, I guess, side of things. But I guess my view of things at the moment is very much focused from a New Zealand point of view. And whether that sort of New Zealand view is the same as the world view, I don't feel like I can speak to that. But certainly from a New Zealand point of view, I guess our situation is that in New Zealand, like, as you know, our team's been pretty successful, you know, event racing over the last few decades. In New Zealand, we have our big awards. I'm not quite sure what you have in the States, but our big sports awards every year are called the Halberg Awards, named after a very famous New Zealand Olympian. Hmm. And our team, Team Seagate, Team Avaya, Team New Zealand, whatever you kind of term you use to describe us, our team's never actually been eligible for those sports awards because event racing, technically,
it's not a sport.
It's not a sport. Yeah. So that's one thing. I guess the downstream effect of that is that we're also not eligible for any government funding, because essentially when we go off to, you know, Reunion Island or Paraguay or where Brazil or wherever to do a World Champs, the World Champs as they stand, the event racing World Champs that we all know and enjoy, is not recognised by our government as an official World Champs because it's essentially not a sanctioned body. Essentially, it's just a private company that just happens to run event races and happens to call one of them the World Champs, which I don't see as a bad thing. Like, I'm not, you know, it's been awesome.
Yeah.
But so there's limitations for us, is that our team has never been able to be fully recognised as we can't be nominated as New Zealand Team of the Year. We can't apply for any government funding, but those things aside, I'm not too worried about that stuff, you know. Yeah. But it also means that there's no real structure in terms of pathways for development of the sport, or, you know, youth pathways or coaching pathways, all the things that benefit a sport here in New Zealand, event racing doesn't actually meet.
Yeah.
So we've known for some time that the only way for that to happen is that event racing essentially forms a global entity and becomes a sanctioned official sport. And then a whole lot of this stuff can kind of start to happen. And it just so happens that while there's been kind of talk about it over the years, and I appreciate that it's a huge amount of work, it's been Ian Adamson that has been the one, to my knowledge, yeah, from my experience of things, that has actually sort of thought, you know, sort of thought, well, how can event racing move forward? Maybe if it's merged with obstacle course racing and we work together and combine these things, then, you know, we can actually tick a lot of these boxes and make the sport more official. And then from there, you know, you can take it to all these other places. So from a New Zealand perspective, that's a pretty exciting thing, because at the moment, as you know, there's not many New Zealand teams that actually make it to the World Champs because, you know, it's a long way for New Zealand teams. It's hard to get sponsorship, et cetera, et cetera. But under a different model, you know, if the event racing champs was a sanctioned event and recognised kind of internationally by the powers that be, essentially, that changes the landscape a lot for us here in New Zealand. And I think for that reason, you know, there's a lot of interest and hope around that kind of concept, I guess you could say. For it to work. So, but I guess the other thing I'll probably add to that is that, you know, I think event tracing is at a point in its kind of pathway that, to me, anyone putting energy into the sport, I see as a positive thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like when World's Toughest Race Eco Challenge came back, you know, like it potentially was going to clash with, you know, World Champs. I think I might have been Sri Lanka that year, but it ended up being postponed anyway. You know, and I don't imagine that Eco Challenge, even if it went forward, I don't imagine they would even pay much attention to what's happening in the World Series as far as dates and, you know, teams and what's the who's in this. But, you know, to me, it's kind of like, well, they're putting energy into the sport. So, you know, to me, it's just like, just be grateful for anything in that direction. Yeah. And that's what I see at the moment. I just see a lot of people, you know, sort of putting a lot of energy into event racing and, you know, essentially going in the same direction, but just on different pathways. And the outcome of that, I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go. But I think while people are that passionate and have that energy and want to see the sport grow and prosper, then I'm just kind of like encouraging everyone just to go for it and do what you can and see where it goes.
Yeah. Well, for someone not in the loop, you've probably explained it better than any of the explanations that I've heard in the last. So kudos on that. But well, so you say you don't know where it's going to go, but what would, like in your wildest dreams, what would you like to see? I mean, do you think it could be an Olympic sport? I mean, a lot of people think that's the be all end all. I don't see how it happens because to be an Olympic sport, something else has to drop, right? And how does this upstart thing compete against, you know, federations have been around for 100 years. So what do you think is the top goal that it can?
Yeah, to me, you know, I'm not, I mean, if event racing made it to the Olympics, I mean, again, I would see that as a great thing, but I personally wouldn't be chasing that. Like, to me, that's not the kind of pinnacle of things. I mean, if anything, I think, I mean, my general sense is the Olympics is kind of, you know, kind of losing a little bit of its kind of status, I think, for just various reasons. And I mean, I wouldn't, again, if event racing made it there, then that's great. And so, you know, in whatever format. But no, I think for me, it's more, you know, about just building the sport and awareness to a point where there's just good infrastructure and opportunities around it. So I guess I'd probably compare it more to, say, you know, the football or soccer World Cup that happens every 4 years. I mean, most footballers, I don't imagine, would put that much value on winning the Olympics, but winning the FIFA World Cup is like the ultimate. And, you know, I think if event racing got to that stage where, you know, not necessarily an annual event, but there was a, you know, everything sort of went to a major event that was kind of, you know, really recognized. And, you know, that was, I mean, I guess that's the thing. But for me, I think the measure of success is all the pathways leading into that. Like, I think having an elite, you know, opportunities for elite races is great. But if I sort of bring it back to New Zealand, like, we're doing really well in New Zealand with event racing, but, and quite incredibly well, given we don't actually get any government help. So it's really just passionate people and event directors that are kind of doing everything. So we've got youth paths, lots of youth stuff happening. Mm-hmm. We've got, women's event racing here is huge. Obviously there's God's Own. It's very difficult for, you know, for youth teams to take that big step to go forward. So I guess to bring it to you, try and condense into an answer that makes sense, is that what I would like to see in New Zealand, and I think this will just basically expand out globally, is that if there's a young person decides they want to get into event racing, that there's obviously some events they can go and do, but there's just clear pathways into the sport. And then there's you know, training and coaching pathways, and essentially, you know, that'll sort of, I guess, lead to more sort of sponsorship opportunities and just a good progression of events. And yeah, I think just at the moment, it's just kind of this big void. It's like, if you're a young person interested in event racing, how do you go from, you know, doing an event at school to being on the start line of, you know, world's toughest race or something, you know, like there's a, yeah, it's just a bit up in the air. So I guess in New Zealand, like my ultimate would be is if we had like the New Zealand Academy of Adventure Racing or something, and then people like myself and some of the experienced racers can actually get in there and work with the younger athletes coming through and actually share our knowledge and experience. But at the moment, there's nothing like that. It's all just, you know, there's no structure around the sport. It's it just kind of, it sort of happens. And some people argue that that's one of the great things about it and it should stay that way. And that may actually be the right, that may be the right answer. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I guess, yeah, I guess I can, my vision is that it gets, the sport gets a little bit more organized. And because I just think it's an amazing sport. Like I think, to be able to go out and train for multiple disciplines and work as a team and go into sort of wilderness areas and sort of, you know, do these a series of challenges is an amazing kind of thing. So to me, it's not obviously not for everyone, but certainly for those that are interested in that, it would be nice to think that those pathways were clear to them.
Yeah. So you're kind of looking like the model, like Australia did with cycling. I mean, they were nowhere and they put together the, you know, the basically an academy so that there was a pathway and a goal at the end of it. So interesting. So if there gets to be a World Cup that's noticeable, then you get to be teams and then you get government. It's like, oh, well, yay New Zealand, because you guys are great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. I think it's starting to sort of get, you know, sort of formulate out, I think. It's probably, I mean, yeah, testing the model maybe a little bit.
Well, let's get to what people really want to know. What have you been doing for adventure?
Oh, lots of stuff. So I've aged a lot in the last couple of years. I turned 50 last month. So, definitely, yeah, I mean, I've said this before, but, I did God's Own a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm not the racer I was 10 years ago. I mean, I have to admit that. And so I'm still keen to do a few more races, but I honestly don't think it's going to be too many more at that top competitive level. But no, we've been pretty lucky. You know, we had God's Own here in 2021 and we had God's Own 2022. So, you know, we've had two really competitive expedition races in the last 2 years. Yeah. So, and then the year before that, I guess, was... Yeah, well, Eco Challenge Fiji wasn't that long before then, so right. I guess we feel pretty lucky. We couldn't travel to Spain last year for the World Champs. Our borders were closed, so that wasn't an option. And I guess for me, you know, we're always active doing things. You know, I've got three teenage children who are always out and about. You know, they're involved in a number of different adventure sports and things, and we have our events company. So yeah, it's there's always plenty of fun things to go and do. And to be honest, I've actually enjoyed not traveling internationally. It's actually been really nice. Just being here in New Zealand and just taking airports and security checks and sitting on airplanes out of the equation for a period. It's been good.
I've been experiencing that this year. I've flown 7-8 times, and I'm like, I know there's going to get to a point where I'm not looking forward to this anymore.
Yeah.
But so far, but I'm also not flying 14 hours every leg. So I'm interested to see where that point where travel becomes that burden and not the excitement part of it. But so can you still whip up on your kids? Are you still faster than they are? Or can you outsmart them at least?
There's some good competition that goes on, but yeah, they've certainly got ahead in a few areas, that's for sure, which is fun. It's exciting. It's cool to see.
Yeah. Are they pretty pumped when they beat Dad up the mountain?
Not outwardly, but I think, just quietly, I think there's a bit of, good. I think on the really ultra endurance stuff, I still probably got a few tricks up my sleeve. So I got a bit of time yet. Yeah.
So at Godzone, so you're old. I use quotation marks again, folks. So let's say you are slowing down. Okay, it happens. How much are you able to offset that, though, with your knowledge and experience?
I think I can, but the reality is the team that I'm racing in have got a huge amount of knowledge and experience as well. So there comes a point where the knowledge and experience that I have, they already have.
Yeah.
So if you can't carry a big pack and keep up, what you can offer can probably be offered by someone else who can offer more as well. So I think at the moment, like, I mean, I know what you're saying, and I think at the moment our team culture is, there's so much unity in the team and trust and respect, and those things take a long time to build and develop. So
yeah.
I know that in the team at the moment that I would be difficult to replace, but everyone can be replaced. It just depends on how much appetite there is for changing. So I think, I guess at the moment, it's important for me to be a contributor in the team and not just along for the ride.
Yeah.
So the last Godzone, I did train really hard for that race and I had a strong race, but I had to put a lot into it, and then it took quite a lot out of me as well. And they're probably the differences that I'm noticing is that to get to the level that I'm used to racing at is just taking a bit more work and effort, and not just the training, but in the recovery and the planning, and I need to be even more onto it, nutritionally, and be really mindful about what else is going on in my life, so that essentially so I can make sure I get the recovery from the training that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And then after the event, I think the road back to recovery is slower than what it was. And I'm not saying like it hasn't changed just in, 1 or 2 years. It's kind of like, if I just look back to, 5 years ago, even, it's like change, it's kind of noticeable. and that's fine. I'm okay with that, but it is, it'd be wrong to ignore that there's some changes going on.
Yeah. Well, we've probably talked about your retirement for the last 5 years. So we'll leave that at there. Except for this question, do you think you decide to stop racing? Will it be because you don't want to do the training or the races? You're not able to contribute enough to the races?
Yeah, I think the training side of it, no, it won't be there, because I mean, I'm always active in the outdoors and always will be. So
my
general level of fitness is never that far away from what's needed to go and finish an expedition race.
Yeah.
I think to go into a high-powered team like Team Avaya, I have to be really careful about what I commit to doing with that team now, to make sure that I can give it the time that it deserves and that team deserves. So I can still do that, but I just have to be very careful about what I take on. I think probably the thing that will change the most is two things. One is that I'm you know, like I actually have really enjoyed not traveling internationally. And then I think going forward, like I'll probably a lot more, a lot more, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess calculated or just mindful about, is it worth it? Is it worth spending 4 or 5 or 6 days of my life traveling to the other side of the world to do like a 100-hour race? Or will I be equally fulfilled just doing an adventure in New Zealand on my own that I have full control over? And so that balance, that equation is getting, you know, years ago, I was like, no, I want to go and race. I want to go and race. Yeah. Now I'm kind of going, I'm quite happy just to go sea kayaking for 7 days, you know, somewhere in New Zealand, or hiking for a week. Yeah. So I guess as I get older, and probably because in adventure racing, I don't feel like there's much more for me to achieve in that sport, in that sense, that it's kind of like, yeah, I still love the sport and I enjoy racing and I enjoy being in that team, but there's other stuff I enjoy doing as well. So I don't need to race to kind of be fulfilled in that sense. That. And then probably the other thing that enters the equation is, you know, the racing can be hard. And, you know, as you know, you've seen it up close, you know what people go through. In any race, there's going to be periods of suffering and discomfort that are just inevitable. And as I kind of get older, I'm just like, I don't know how much more of this I willingly want to put myself through. You know, I'm still open to doing a few more of those races, but I guess I'm just a lot more, I just feel going forward from certainly, you know, out of COVID, just a lot more, you know, calculated, I guess, about what I commit to and things. In terms of doing races on a more social level, like I'd love to, you know, if any of my children wanted to do an expedition race, I'd love to go and do that with them if that's what they wanted. You know, or, you know, a group of friends that want to do a race, and I'll be like, oh, well, this is going to be easy for me. I mean, we're going to be sleeping every night and stopping at cafes for lunch and stuff, you know, that'll be great. So, so we'll see.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever asked you this. It seems like a dumb bucket list question, because it is, but is there any place you've ever really want to go to a race? Not necessarily that there's been a race there, but is there any place in the world that you'd say, if there's a race there, I'm doing it?
Yeah, to be honest, there has been, and I feel bad for saying this now, given what's happening in the world right now, but I've always thought that the Russian continent, you know, the wilderness part of Russia, just looks fascinating. You know, more sort of eastern Russia above Japan and around that north, I guess around north of North Korea, around there, like purely from a wilderness aspect. Like I look at maps of, you know, an imagery of that part of the world, and there's rivers there, and I guess a big continent has a lot of interest for me because we essentially live on a relatively small island. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's mountain ranges there that are bigger than our Southern Alps that no one even really gives a second glance at, and you know, huge river systems and you know, plains like you know, volcanoes and huge lakes, and you know, I just think, man, and so much and not very populated out there, and I imagine the people out there would be really interesting culturally as well.
But
that's the place where I always thought, man, if there's ever a race in you know, in that part of Russia, like that would be a fascinating place to travel to, mainly geographically. You know, obviously politically right now it's not good. But again, you know, I imagine those people that live out in Eastern Russia probably oblivious to what's happening over in the Ukraine. There's been lots of places I've thought would make, you know, great places for adventure racing, but that has been the one place that I sort of thought, wow, that would be, you know, that would be a race that I'm not going to miss out there somewhere.
So we'll start to wrap up here a little bit, but this is sort of a two-part question. No, it's a two-part question. One, how do you decide on your personal adventures? And when you decide on something, do you have to get maps out, or do you know all of New Zealand?
I think we do get maps out. Once you sort of know, you know, where the area you want to go to. But I think, and as you know, New Zealand's not a big place, and the South Island is, generally speaking, where most of the trips I want to do are. Obviously, for those who don't know, New Zealand's made up of two islands, the North and the South. Mm-hmm. They're not the most kind of creative names, but that's what they're called.
And, hey, I live in South Dakota, which is south of North Dakota. So
true. You get it. So the South Island. So if you narrow that down, I mean, the places that I, you know, want to explore in the South Island, you know, there's only really a few regions that hold those kind of areas. And then it's just a matter of making the time to sort of break those regions into little bite-sized, adventure-sized trips, and then sort of going and doing things. So, yeah, I mean, I would say that there's, you know, after 30 years or more of doing adventure trips in the South Island, which is largely what I love to explore, you know, I've probably got, I could easily come up with a list of 10, easily come up with 10 kind of week-long trips that would take me into new kind of areas and places that I want to go to. So,
yeah.
And that's essentially what we do. Like, we just, you know, whenever we get a chunk of time, we, you know, and certain areas work better in different seasons as well. So it's like, yeah. Oh, you know, if we want to go do a ski trip here, or a pack rafting trip there, or sea kayaking, or whatever it is. So getting there though, I'm getting pretty good coverage.
Yeah, you pretty much got an idea what's going to be around the next bend in a lot of spots.
totally.
Yeah. So the kids are all still for adventure with you, or are they starting to go out on their own a little more?
Definitely out on their own. So they, right now they're 13, 17, and 15, 17, and 19. So two of them are at high school and one is at college. Yeah. And the older one at college, she will pick and choose whether she's going to come on a family adventure or do her own thing. Yeah. And the other two who are at high school, pretty much, you know, as a family and things, we generally will just go and do family stuff and trips, and everyone's kind of on the same sort of agenda in that sense. But they do have things that come up, you know, some sports or activities that they just do individually that, you know, we just kind of balance things out. But no, we still do a lot together, which is great.
So do you expect that to continue, basically, other than, you know, obviously they're going to go on their own once in a while, but do you think, I mean, in 10 years, are you guys still going to be doing trips together? I mean, it's hard to tell, right?
I think what will probably happen is what will probably come down to who's paying for the trip. So
if dad's paying, they're gonna go.
yeah I think so. I don't know, it'd be interesting to see. You know, I guess for us we just hope that they, you know, have a relationship with the natural world, with the wilderness, and want to go and spend their own time in there. And whether we're involved in that, you know, my wife and I, who knows? I mean, we'll go and do our own things anyway. But you know, I have seen some adventure families with older kids, and some of those families, the kids actually start when they're older, we're young adults, they start planning trips and inviting their parents along. So who knows, that could be quite fun as well.
Yeah. All right. I got just one more question for you, because let's say somebody is listening to this for the first time and they're like, well, okay, we don't know who it is because we never introduced you. No, it's Nathan Fave, but you, who are you? Who are you?
Somebody that's never, who am I?
Yeah, that's never met you. How do you see yourself? Describe yourself.
Well, I think I describe myself as a person who's very committed to following their dreams and passions. So I am from New Zealand, and I feel quite lucky that as a young person, I realized or discovered what my passions were, and that was essentially to be out adventuring. That is kind of where I feel most comfortable and most purposeful and most at peace, I think you could say. And when I say adventure, I think it's just being closely connected to nature. So, you know, I like to walk in the forest and kayak on the ocean and travel down rivers and camp in a tent and cook on fires and just live a pretty basic life in the outdoors. So really my whole adult life, for 30 more years, has really just been me continuously scheming about how can I set myself up so I can spend as much as time possible out doing the things I enjoy doing in the outdoors. So to sum that up, like, I would consider myself an adventurer and an outdoor adventurer. And then I guess one of the things that I do as an outdoor adventurer is I do adventure racing. Another thing I do with that is I have been an outdoor educator, an outdoor instructor, adventure guide. And then as a father, I have used, the natural world or the wilderness and adventure as a vehicle to teach my children the values that I think are important. And I guess if I bundle all that together, for me, it's been, or is, and has been, what I consider to be a really healthy lifestyle, like a lot of time out and fresh air and sunshine and wind and rain, and doing physical exercise, which I think is important for humans. And as well as that, I think developing an awareness and an appreciation for the natural world. So, going out into the outdoors and seeing amazing things and going, well, Earth is an incredible planet. We need to look after it. And the more I see those places, the more I think about that. And I guess, what scares me a bit is that people who haven't had that opportunity that I've had and live a fairly probably numbed existence, just in a day-to-day, routine in the city somewhere, and they kind of lose touch, I think, of many of those things I've talked about. And so that's not me. I'm at the other side. So that's probably about Nathan, I reckon.
Yeah, that sounds like the Nathan I know anyway. So good job. All right. Well, I very much appreciate the time, and what I really hope is that we get to the same place sometime.
Cool. So it's good to catch up. It's been a few years, and we'll see. Our team is quite keen to go to Paraguay in September. So we need to work through a few details. We're still mainly just watching the borders. We're still very fearful of getting
stuck in Paraguay.
How quickly that can change. So I think we're open to that possibility. So we'll just see how it goes. And then I think there was murmurings just recently about doing God's Own again. So I think I think there'll be a few more races to do before
you start to have fun.
I am still playing golf though, so it is
that was going to be the first thing I asked you, and I spaced it out. So how's the golf game?
Oh, it has suffered a bit over COVID and summer, but I played a pretty good round on Friday. So right now it's I'm feeling fairly positive about it. So I still enjoy it.
Isn't that how golf goes? You hate it till you hit that perfect shot, then you're like, oh, I'm good. Let's keep going.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cool, Randy. All right. Well, yeah, like you say, hopefully we get to meet in person again, some random strange place somewhere in the world. So see how things go.
And I will come up the river in a boat and you'll be paddling and you'll just say, hey, Randy, like you expected me to come around the corner. So
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
All right.
Cool, okay. Cool.
Thank you. It's been great. Right.
Cheers. Thank you. See you later.
The way he commanded and the life he demanded, it kept us all in a struggle. When he ruled with his fist, it kept us all out of trouble. Even though he would leave, he wore his heart on his sleeve. By the way that he walked, he taught me how to believe. Oh man, look at my life. Take a look. Oh man, look at my life. Yeah. Life. Cause I'm alive like you. Oh man, take a look at my life. His heart fell out breaking, he looked right up at the ceiling and start again, never breathe a word of his loss. Cause it's not about winning, it's the rivers you cross. And the pain that you feel could be the fuel that you use. And if you need the direction, be it the path that you choose. My old man is a legend, he casts a shadow so great. I think of how he is watching with every move that I make. Setting the pace, no more dreams will be stolen, just the ride was a chase. And you've been through the worst, now you know who to trust. Leave them something behind before the ashes and dust. I like you. Oh.